by transcription.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective, brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic, the non-alcoholic hair tonic that contains lanolin. Wild Root Cream Oil, again and again, the choice of men and women and children, too.
Sam Spade Detective Agency.
Me, sweetheart.
Sam, where have you been?
I've been tasting the bitter with the sweet at Miss Wigginson's School for Girls, sort of a special course in homicidal apiculture.
Apiculture?
Mm-hmm.
There were apes involved?
Effie, where is your Latin? Apis, apianus, of or pertaining to bees.
Oh, well, bees, of course. It was a bee caper?
It was a beekeeper caper.
Oh, that's funny, sir. That's a honey.
Effie, put these words down in your little book. Honey, sweetness, hives, combs, etc. Never mention them again.
What?
Keep things humming, sweetheart, and I'll be right down to drone my way through my report on the queen bee caper.
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of Miss...
Oil Hair Tonic grooms your hair neatly and naturally, relieves dryness, and removes loose dandruff. Yes, you'll be glad to discover that just a few drops of Wild Root Cream Oil make a big difference. So if you've never tried it before, get the 25-cent Get Acquainted size and ask for it by name. Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men... and women and children, too. And now, with Howard Duff starring as Spade, Wild Root brings to the air the greatest private detective of them all in the adventures of Sam Spade.
Sam! Oh! Sam, your face! What happened to it?
Many, many things, Jeff. In time, Effie, my wounds will heal.
Oh, I'll bet that Mamie Gagan had something to do with it. I could tell when she came in here that she was going
to be... Mortuus nil nisi bonum.
Huh?
Latin, speak well of the dead, remember?
Oh, yes.
One thing at a time, sweetheart. Let's get this over with. I want to find a doctor.
Oh, you're so brave, Sam. Carrying on in the face of your face.
Sure, sure, sure.
You won't be satisfied until you just die.
My eyes told me it was you, but my mind screamed, no. I checked your wide-brimmed pork pie, your zoot gabardine slacks, suede and alligator wing-tip shoes, and it still repeated, you.
Sammy, do not look as if you have just lamped a ghost. It is I, $5 Frankie.
But at this hour, Frankie, what is it? Your watch broken? Did you lose your way? You sleepwalking? What?
No, Sam. I am in complete possession of my faculties.
Good.
And I came here with the full knowledge of my intellect.
Uh-huh.
I even see through the crystal of my timepiece that it is 1 o'clock, the hour from which they break from the barrier.
That's right.
But I have not been drinking, and as for sleepwalking, that is strictly for gents with unhappy marital relationships.
All right, Frankie, I'm forced to agree with you that you're standing in front of me instead of the $5 window. Now, what's the dope?
Well, ordinarily, I do not resort to hiring a strong arm to consummate my business dealings.
Naturally.
There being a full supply of such muscles lying around the back room of Patterson's smoke shop.
Loose.
But when the job calls for both tact and muscle... I am forced to roam far abroad in search of the same.
You mean you have a job for me? A real honest to sea biscuit job that'll pay money?
With the ordinary Seamus, I might try to offer a little paddock chatter, you know?
Yes.
But would you, Sammy, would you, I will tender coin of the realm.
Good.
I will pay you, of course, in $5 bills, as is my wont. I hate to get wrong with cops.
Yeah. Okay. Tell the boss
I already told the boss. Get going. So long, Spade.
Just stay there and enjoy your sandwich, sir.
Yeah, so long. The waiter, of course, was the guy who called me, a white-faced young kid sweating with his black tie up under his left ear. They walked outside and got into a car parked in front of the restaurant. Of all things, a limousine with a liveried chauffeur. I watched through the front doors and pulled away, picked up the license number, and called the Department of Motor Vehicles. The car belonged to Mike Sheldon, known to the voters of the North Beach section as Uncle Mike. A white-haired, jolly-faced gentleman of dubious means and still more dubious methods who had something to do with politics. What he had to do with a weasel like Freddie Malloy, much less a poor waiter boy at Barney's, was something to ponder. I sidled back to my booth and attacked the corned beef on wheat. My teeth, instead of going all the way through the sandwich, which is the way I like it, struck something firm and unyielding. I pulled from between the lettuce and the bread a wax paper envelope. Inside was a $50 bill and a small photograph of a blonde. Denny, the waiter, had scribbled three words in the corner of it. Find this girl.
You care for some more coffee, sir? I got plenty more.
Yeah. Bring the pot, will you? Yeah. And, waiter.
Yes, sir?
Denny, the kid who was just here. What's his last name?
Denny? It's Weston. Denny Weston.
Okay. Where's he live?
A trick like that.
Mm-hmm. And, what do you want me to do, Miss Adams?
I want you should pay a formal call on that dame and tell her that upon the very next occasion of any violence or threats thereof out of her, I'm going to yell cop. In fact, Mr. Spade, I am placing my life and limbs in your hands. And if you are anything of what you're cracked up to be, you will have no difficulty in giving that creepy crow the bum's rush straight out of my life.
Pardon me, Miss Adams. My secretary seems to be calling you.
Out of my way. I know who's in there, and I'm going in.
Out of my way.
Mrs. Davis, sir, keep her off. You should have hired the 4th Marines, dearie.
Now, ladies. Ladies, please. Break it up.
You all show you who to get tough with. You don't call me shallows, or I'll let you have it.
Now, ladies, please. Now, let's talk this over calmly and sensibly.
Okay, you asked for it.
Now, ladies.
Oh!
Sam, wake up. Oh, Sam, speak to me. Sam.
Oh, no. Don't hit me again. No, you're going to have the chills.
Sam. Oh, Sam, you poor darling.
Hmm? What is it? Tastes awful.
Water, Sam.
Oh. Where'd they go?
Well, they chased each other down the hall. I thought you'd gone out.
I did.
Louie was leaning over the gunwale. We untangled a float, and the sea took us by the stern. We broached. I saw him go over and plunge into the white water. I brought the boat about then. For 2 hours, I yelled, I circled around, I blew the whistle, everything. Then the Coast Guard came. Bosky, I swear it, that's all I know. I never saw him.
Impossible!
Silencio! Silencio!
My brothers, it was your will that I sit here in judgment of Dominic Torrio. Before I go on, are there any more questions you have to ask him? Are there any among you who have evidence to offer against him? So be it. You know as well as I, there is only one verdict here. The charge is dismissed. The court is adjourned.
Everyone was still for a second, like a big tableau. Foskey, white-haired and dignified on the platform, looking down at Dominic, and the rest of them all on their feet now, boring holes through him with their eyes. He was the first to move, turning slowly, walking out through the crowd toward the door, looking tentatively from face to face, knowing now he hadn't been acquitted at all, as one by one they turned their backs on him. I felt terribly sorry for Dominic. Unfortunately.
The dame?
The dame. To paraphrase Bergendorf, calling her a dame was like calling the Kimberly Cross a hunk of jewelry. But that's not what interested me, at least not right then. She was walking back and forth in front of Bergendorf's like a kid at the dentist door trying to get up the nerve to push the button. Quoting from my notes, it says 9:02 a.m., girl, 5'2", blonde, early 20s, gray tweed suit, spent a few indecisive minutes in front of Bergendorf's, finally went in. She came out almost immediately, started west on Sutter, then evidently saw a patrol officer approaching on same side of street. Hurriedly crossed toward our post in Public Health Department Mobile Unit Number 2 and entered.
Hello.
Well, good morning.
Am I too early for the...
Oh, you're just in time. First customer of the day. Let's see now. Name?
Martin.
Martin. First name?
Bernice.
Address?
826...
She wasn't a very good liar. While she was telling him her name was Bernice Martin, she filled with a leather handbag with the initials PC on it, big enough to read from across the street. George filled the form out, then moved her around to the machine. By now, the cop she was ducking had walked by and turned the corner.
No. She walked in front of the camera at just the wrong time and loused up the shot. We had to shoot it over.
Yeah, we had a model with a pair of Norby's nylons on, see...
well-known brand of stocking, and the idea was to stand her up next to a train coming down at the depot here.
Then what we tried to do was get a shot of her fixing her guard, her leg guard, you know.
Yeah.
Sure fire.
Yeah, and with a lot of admiring glances from the crowd.
From the crowd. Brand new idea. Yeah. Real train, real station, real people.
Human.
Documentary.
Yeah. Very. So Al sets up the camera, and the model mixed with the garter, and I whistle to get the crowd's eye, and we set off the flash. But the dame here walked in front of the camera.
However, it was not her fault.
No, it was an awful nice kid. We told her to drop by, we'd give her the shot.
Great, swell. What's her name?
I don't know.
Did she come by?
Yeah, a couple of mornings ago. I gave her the print and the negative, too.
Got any other copies of it?
I don't know. Take us a while to check the file.
Oh, a third.
Look, do that, will you? And if you find anything, here's my phone number.
Yeah. Now, as I was saying about that fork, John.
Again with a
your
fork.
Your fork is your fork. There is nothing you can do to glamorize
it. I glamorize the number of forks.
So I bought an afternoon paper and went back to the office to take the load off my plate and mull over this latest turn of events. I mulled, decided to contact Denny Weston. My
said cement floor had been laid, I was told by the janitor, Wednesday morning. The morning after a gun was fired in 608, the same morning on which Max Barstow suddenly left to visit his parents. And about here in the plot, it was dramatically correct to wonder if Max might be sleeping under the furnace with a new cement overcoat covering him. I went back to my apartment for a couple of long ones and some thought. It was getting along about supper time when there was a feminine knock. I guessed it to be Miss Room Service herself, Honey Kane. But no. Better. Much better.
May I come in?
You may. Shall I leave the door open?
I'd rather you close it.
Anything to make you feel at home? Drink?
No. Talk.
Oh.
What are you doing here, Sam?
The name's Humboldt. Mark Humboldt.
All right. Play it any way you want. But I've seen you around. I know who you are. You move in today, and half hour later you find our apartment. Why?
Your apartment found me. At least half of it did. The gift horse part.
Maybe so, but I figure you helped a little somewhere.
Hmm.
What are you trying to get on us?
Nothing. I just moved in here for a place to live.
With one suitcase and a bottle?
Oh, I'm an actor.
Look, whatever it is, lay off, will you? I've had enough trouble in my life. Things are just starting to go right.
Sandra, I don't know what's on your mind, but as far as I'm concerned, you're clean.
All right. Maybe I made a mistake. I'll try to make it up to you sometime.
Well, maybe you can start right now.
I think I'll open the door again.
Now, just a question.
In a closet, kidder. Where do you keep yours? Under the bed?
Which closet? In here?
Hey, wait a minute,
get
you.
Get your hands off of me.
Let me see your warrant. It better be good or you're going out of here on your head.
Take your hands off me, Eddie.
Let's see that warrant.
All right, I got a warrant, Eddie. Here. I didn't find what I was looking for, a pair of crepe-soled shoes with traces of Apple of Eve nail polish on them, but in one of his coat pockets I found a sales slip from a department store cosmetics counter. There were several items, but the one that interested me said, one lipstick nail polish set, Apple of Eve. About then I smelled brandy and a voice behind me said,
what happened to the kid?
Huh? Oh, he asked for my warrant.
Well, when you come to see me, I'll know better.
Your name is Gorse Hagen. I'm headed for your place right now.
What are you looking for?
A pair of shoes with crepe soles.
What do you want with my deck shoes?
I thought maybe they'd match up with this piece of a shirt with your initials on it.
Give me that.
That's a fact.
Where'd you get that?
In the incinerator at Eve Adams' place.
Well, that don't prove anything. Lots of people got the same initials. Have you talked to, George Howard?
He's alibied. He's out of town.
That proves it's a frame. I don't know any George Howard.
I thought so.
Okay, let's cut out the monkey business. Give it to me.
It's evidence.
Give it to me!
All right, I'll give it to you. I did. He gave it right back to me. I was only losing on points until I tripped over poor old Eddie and lost my balance. That's when he gave me the coup de grace. I wasn't quite unconscious, but somehow I just didn't feel like getting up. When the apartment door opened, I opened my good eye just wide enough to see Dreamer Love walk in.
Gorse, what are you doing here?
I come to help you, Dreamer.
I don't need any help from you, Gorse. I told you that 3 years ago.
Why? Did you kill her?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You killed Eve Adams. Why?
You're wrong, Gorse. I haven't seen Evie in ages.
Why did you kill her?
All right, I did it.
Yeah? Why?
I was jealous. Seeing the two of you together after all we'd been to each other. Go on, laugh at me. I committed murder out of love for you. It's very funny, isn't it?
I'm very fond of you, Dreamer. My poor little Dreamer love. I'd give you anything, honey. The shirt from my back. Here. Here's a piece of it on the counter.
What? Where'd you...
I see you're impressed. Me too.
Come on, we'll go someplace where we can be alone and talk things over.
No, Gus, please. I can explain everything.
You can explain in the car on the way down to the boat. Come on.
You're hurting me. Oh, no.
Come on, lock that door.
Stupid me, I staggered to my feet and stumbled over to the door. I reached it just as Hagen's car pulled
into the car I rented from you and drive off. Then I turned around, put a new clip in my gun, and walked back to the old homestead. It was so very homey. By the light of an oil lamp, Mrs. Elkins was peacefully knitting what looked like a shroud.
Why, Mr. Spade?
Why, Mrs. Elkins?
Land sakes.
Land sakes. Now that we got that out of the way, let's get down to business.
If you're here to make trouble, young man, believe me, I can handle trouble. My kind of stock know about trouble.
Well, suppose you tell me about the trouble I just had, or haven't you heard all the shots that were fired around here tonight?
Shots? My. Seems I would have heard gunshots.
Seems you would. Look, I've got a sheriff on the way.
Have you, Mr. Spade? Why?
I suppose you didn't hear the shooting.
Oh, yes, I'd forgotten. Was anyone hurt?
A man named Linden. He's dead.
Linden. Now, that sounds familiar.
It should. He stayed here 5 nights ago. He was a jewelry salesman.
Yes, now I remember. You say he's dead?
Somebody tried to bury him alive in your little cave.
How awful. I do declare.
I thought you would. Well?
You must be joshing, Mr. Spade.
I'm not joshing at all, Mrs. Elkins.
Dead alive, you say.
Look, let's talk just like plain folks. Where's your husband? Where's the jewelry samples you probably stole from Linden? Is there anything else you want to say?
Gunshots, eh? Well...
Hey, where have you been?
Oh.
The police are here, and I have been all alone in the house.
Where did Bob go?
They took him away. They arrested him.
What for?
They found a pistol hidden in his room. They say it is the weapon that killed his father.
Pistol?
Please, you are not going to leave me alone. I'm so frightened, being alone with my conscience.
Conscience?
But how could I have known what my foster father had in mind?
Just what did he have in mind? Suicide?
Oh, please, do not say that. Even if it were true, I cannot bear the thought that I had made him so unhappy. I did not want to disobey him, but I could not. Oh, I could not.
Come on, Sandra. Don't do that.
The Orientals are supposed to be without feelings. But you see, it is not true.
Of course not.
Please, take me to the house.
Sure.
And you will not leave. You will stay with me.
Sure, I will.
You do not think I am a wicked girl to refuse to marry the man of my father's choice?
If it was Captain Sherry...
Well... Oh, no. I thought you knew. He wanted me to marry his son.
I spent the rest of the night keeping her insomnia company, and a very pretty one, too. I didn't get to you on the phone to ask you about that pistol of Bob Battle's that you'd tagged as the murder weapon until just after sunrise. What I learned from you was that the rifle that had posed with a dummy warrior was an old-fashioned Belgian-made Browning with a smooth bore, which could use revolver ammunition. But the fatal slug did match the test slug from Bob's revolver. What I told you was that ballistics can lie, and that you should take another look at the metal clamp and the trigger guard of the rifle. You said you would, had the lab run tests on both guns, and by noon you had freed Bob Battle and released the exhibits into my custody. By 12:45, I had the stage set exactly as it had been set for Jonathan Battle's murder, except that the door was not locked. Chandra was standing at the easel, as near as I could figure, in the spot where Jonathan Battle had been standing when the slug tore through him, and Bob Battle was standing just close enough to her. You, Deputy Dear, were lurking in the shrubbery outside, observing the whole colossal spectacle. Nevertheless, I plunged unblushingly ahead toward my Agatha Christie finish.
But, Sam, I do not understand. What are we waiting for?
You won't have long to wait, Chandra.
You must be off your nut. I've been cleared. Nobody ever suspected Chandra. What do you hope to prove?
Maybe that I'm wrong.
Well, why isn't Sherry here?
If I'm right, he will be.
After 5 years, I could get my trainer's license back.
Tell me more.
Do you know what it is to love horse flesh and not be able to go near it for 5 years?
No, the bang-tail bug never got me. You can't con guys like Frankie and his thugs out of some money to buy a horse whenever you want one.
There's more to the story. The horse I doped didn't get into the race. And the jockey had to ride another mount. He was thrown and killed.
Well, it was too bad.
I felt that I'd murdered the man. His name was Sandy Bean.
Sandy Bean? Is that stable boy at Sunset Stables any relative?
His son.
Oh.
His wife and son ran out of money, and they've had a hard time of it. I've worked as a janitor for the past 5 years trying to raise enough money to buy them a horse to help make up for what I did.
How much did you save?
Only $1,500. The horse I wanted, a two-year-old named Sure Thing, cost $3,000.
Well, things are beginning to clear up now. How did you figure you could take money from Frankie to buy it?
Well, Frankie and his friends made a lot of money off Sandy Bean when he rode. I figured it wouldn't hurt them to pay a little of it back.
Well, I don't think they'd see it that way.
I wasn't stealing the money. I was going to give each of them a 10% of the horse. I didn't dare tell it until after I bought it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Gentle Joe, maybe they'll see the light, but I doubt it.
I was going to take 10% for training her, give the other 60 to Mrs. Bean and her son, Danny. Mm. He'll make a good jockey. And sure
thing... Around my gun. And I took off some clothes and eased myself over the side. I didn't swim for speed, but for distance. Stopping now and then to make sure the man in the boat was still covering for me. Felt my way around the hull till I found the anchor rope. Just as I grabbed it, I heard him rest his oars.
Hagen, who's that? Eddie Love. What do you want? I've come after my sister.
Go on home, Eddie. She's sailing with me. That's the way she wants it.
You're lying.
Wait a second. Come on out of there, Dreamer.
What's happened?
Your brother's down there in the boat. Talk to him.
Well, what am I going
to... Talk to him.
All right. Eddie.
What's he done to you, sis?
I'm all right, Eddie. Everything's all right. Gus and I have decided... Gone home, Eddie.
He's lying to you. He knows you framed him. If you sail out with him, you won't come back.
No, Eddie.
I'm coming aboard.
Eddie, no. Gus, please. No!
What? Drop it, Hagen.
No.
Drop the rifle.
I'll drop
you. You're a lousy, shameless...
Sam, did he hurt you?
No, I've been kicked in the stomach before. It takes a woman to kick you in the teeth.
I'm sorry.
I don't care what you did. What burns me up, you didn't do it right. I hate a bungler, especially a female bungler.
I'm a bungler. You're the one. It would have worked if you hadn't gone poking in the incinerator. I should have called the police. They'd have known what to do with evidence like that. They've been wanting to get something on Gorse ever since repeal.
Listen, Angel, any flatfoot could have seen through that setup. Eve Adams was sitting in front of a mirror when she was maced. She saw the murderer enter the room. She got it in the back of the head. That means she trusted whoever walked up behind her. That also means the evidence of a struggle was faked.
But the nail polish on Gorse's shirt.
You put that nail polish on her fingers after she was dead, laid that trail to the incinerator with a pair of Gorse's shoes where any flatfoot was supposed to think he'd try to destroy the incriminating shirt. But the dumbest thing you did was lying to me about that matching lipstick you dropped in my office. That made you look guiltier than anybody, because anybody could have planted that fake evidence.
I didn't kill her. I'm not a murderer.
Your brother might have got off easy. Crime of passion.
Oh, please, please don't say that. I can't bear the thought that after everything I did, it's all come to nothing.
Here. Have a lifesaver. You may need it. Period. And a report.
Oh, Sam. Poor Captain Pasalti.
P is silent. F is in Passam. Go type that up.
All right, Sam.
Last one in the package.
Yeah, country liquor. Tell me, Sheriff. Did you by any chance...
Well, sure. Of course I did. I got him, Slade.
Report.
Sam. Do you mean to tell me you let a little country sheriff outdo you?
Well, Effie, Homer Pickett's coming up for re-election next fall, and besides, you might think I was egotistical if I told you how it really ended.
But your reputation. You're the greatest private detective of them all.
And so I can afford to be generous. Now, not another word. Scoop. Type that up.
If your supply of Wild Root Cream Oil hair tonic is getting low, better make a note to get some more tonight or first thing tomorrow. Remember, Wild Root Cream Oil is the famous hair tonic that grooms your hair neatly and naturally, relieves dryness, removes loose dandruff. Always keep a big bottle or tube on hand. And ask your barber for a professional application of Wild Root Cream Oil hair tonic. Again and again, the choice of men and women and children, too.
Let me see here. F, you really...
Sir, I can't seem to hold me.
was an awkward plan at best. The mortuus nil nisi bonum, Spade. Or if your second year Latin escapes your memory, speak well the dead.
Period and a report.
Oh, Sam. All those people.
Four in all.
And that poor girl, Daphne. How she must have felt when she fell. Oh, Sam.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
You poor darling.
Well, it's about time.
And you go right home. In fact, I'm going to take you home.
Yeah? Then what?
Well.
You are a registered nurse, maybe? Hmm?
Well, I...
Go type that up. I am completely well, and when you return, we shall Indian wrestle.
Certainly, sir.
And now, listen to this. Shopping note. Tonight or tomorrow, get a family-sized bottle or handy tube of Wild Root Cream Oil, America's favorite hair tonic.
Oh, good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
Listen to this. Shopping note. Tonight or tomorrow, get a family-sized bottle or handy tube of Wild Root Cream Oil, America's favorite hair tonic.
Good night, sweetheart.
Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Lorene Tuttle is Effie. The Adventures of Sam Spade are written for radio by Bob Tallman and Gil Dowd. Musical direction by Lud Gluskin, with score composed by Renee and Pierre Garrigank. Join us again next Sunday when author Dashiell Hammett and producer William Spear join forces for another adventure with Sam Spade. Brought to you, transcribed by Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men and women and children, too. This is Dick Joy reminding you to...
Get Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. It keeps your hair in trim. You see, it's non-alcoholic, Charlie. It's made with soothing lanolin. You better get Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. Start using it today.
I haven't even your wife to be versus...
Nothing but peace and quiet.
Fairly regular paycheck.
With only a corpse now and then to produce a ripple on the mirror smoothness of our bliss.
Oh, that's beautiful, Sam.
I thought so.
You don't have a single terrible secret either.
No, but just to keep you interested, dear one, from time to time I shall pick up a piece of paper, read it, let the blood drain slowly from my face, then clasp you to me thusly.
Sam!
Holding you close and just before striding silently from the room, mutter... In your shell pink ear.
I know. Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade are produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade was played by Stephen Dunn. Lorene Tuttle as Effie. Script for tonight's adventure by Harold Swanton. Musical scoring by Lud Gluskin, conducted by Robert Armbruster. Join us again next week, same time, for another adventure with Sam Spade. Join the magnificent Montague and have fun at Duffy's Tavern on NBC.